All right. Welcome to Chad Watch, everybody. I'm Chris.
I'm Kyle Miller.
And we got a very special guest today, Rick Thompson. He's a good friend of the show, and both me and Kyle. And we wanted to just kind of do an episode where we talked about the market. If you buy weed even like a little bit in a store, you've definitely seen prices getting like, you know, bare basement, you know, where I think we're at the bottom of the market. And so we're going to talk about that today. And we're going to talk about some just mergers and acquisitions and just a couple other timely topical things going on in the industry. So Rick, thanks for being on, man. You want to tell everybody just a little bit about yourself and just kind of what you think is important context for setting up this episode, man?
Well, thanks, Chris. Thanks, Kyle. And glad to be on Chad Watch finally. Long time watcher, first time appearance. Chad Watch is a pretty important podcast as far as I'm concerned. What we're really talking about here are identifying for consumers who the good players are in the industry itself. And that's one of the things I've been focused on doing for a long time. In 2009, I started Big Daddy's Compassion Club as a partner with Rick Ferris. We ended up with 5 facilities across the state. Due to a variety of factors, those had to go away, and my business partner did a couple of years in jail, and I transferred my talents over to online journalism and print media, and I've done a ton of articles for High Times magazine, for Skunk, for Culture, other industry players, and then I've done a lot of advocacy. Michigan Normal, I'm the current executive director, but I've also held different positions in different other organizations too, and currently I work a lot with Redemption Cannabis, doing vendor days or personal appearances at cannabis retailers across the state of Michigan. And I know you two can appreciate this. You learn a lot about what consumers really want and what they can really do when you spend 4 hours staring at people's ass while they make decisions. You know,
they're at Absolutely.
They're at a counter weighing sure. their options, right? And you're a dispassionate observer in the back watching the interactions go down. You can really see what's important to them. And also you pick up on cues that perhaps a bud tender doesn't, because they have different things on their mind than you do. So it's intriguing to see how the consumers have kind of modified what was important to them in the past versus what is now.
No, for sure, man. And that's right. So I think you have a very unique perspective, man. And another reason too, that I wanted to have you on the show, which you touched on, but I don't think a lot of people, because a lot of people, I think even people who watch the show might be relatively new to the community. And when I say that, I mean like the last few years, which isn't particularly like not a long time. I get that. But there, a lot of shit happened in those interim caregiver years. So I think, you know, the scope of this show and like the kind of like the constituency, I guess you will, of this show is probably like mostly a lot of people who are probably cuts pretty close to 50-50 of people who are been patients or caregivers and have been in our community maybe since 2008, 9, 10, like a long time, people who are in the caregiver stores, and then people who are in the industry, maybe newer into the industry and have like an appreciation for that culture and stuff. But I think the whole context is important because to some people, they're like, oh my God, this is insane. And I'm actually guilty. I say this stuff too, like, shit's cheapest it's ever been, but like it's the cheapest it's ever been in the legal market, you know, in the caregiver days when there were 90 stores in Lansing, for example. This was market pricing, what we see right now. Like people were buying like ounces of $125 ounces that we would probably smoke, you know. It wouldn't be like shit we're like proud of or like showing off, but it's stuff that we would smoke, you know. So I think that like that's a really important thing, is like with all of the craziness going on in the market, is we're still just now, as far as access and price and quality, like we're just now getting to be at parity of where the caregiver market was, in my opinion, for a decade, you know?
And I'll tell you that I've purchased caregiver cannabis since the start, since caregivers originated in 2009, and the price hasn't really changed a ton. You know, it's essentially, as Chris just described, a buck and a quarter, buck and a half a zip. That's a pretty much a going market price in the caregiver industry. And one of the problems that the regulated industry had is recruiting people from the unregulated market to come in and shop in stores. And it was always a pricing thing. So if my caregiver price is $150 and you're at $300, you're not getting my money, right? But as the price has dropped, I think more people are now coming into the cannabis retail stores. Plus, let's not discount the maturity of the market. But that price element is super important to the consuming public. And when people launch products in Michigan that have perhaps a celebrity name or a brand on them, and they want to charge triple what people are used to paying, I just think these are people that are disconnected. These are truly chads that are totally disconnected from our marketplace. When some NBA guy comes in with $60 eighths and redemption is blowing it out with fire at 25, how are you going to be successful with that?
No, for sure, man.
Absolutely. I think you nailed it on the head with that. The price quality has got to a point where truly people can get fire product at an economy price. And that's always been the goal, certainly. I think that the market has matured maybe a little faster than we originally anticipated. But, you know, it's where it is to stay, as Chris was saying. I think we've reached the point where the market, we're not going to see $2,600 wholesale pounds anymore.
Unless it's really fucking fire, man.
Like, it has to be fire as fuck.
And it also has to have like a sell through. People actually have to want it. You know what I mean?
Yes, exactly. The branding of that has to be just top notch, because even if your product is, you know, worthy of that price, you really got to have the name at this point, because there's so many competing brands that people are going to turn their head away at that price unless you can really rope them in with some powerful branding.
Yeah. Yeah, man. So that leads me to a question for, I guess, actually for both of you. Kyle, you'd have a very good perspective on this too. And Ricky, and I know that you know a lot of folks in the licensed game and kind of people who have done both caregiver and licensed, or maybe people that have just done one or the other. So the wholesale pricing, like we just kind of alluded to, that's ultimately what's bringing these prices down for consumers, right? There's too much of this shit, right? And there's partially because our state does have one of the better licensing schemes. It's relatively easy, using that term, you know, pretty loosely. It's relatively easy compared to like Florida or some shit to get a license here. And so there's a kind of an oversupply issue. And something that we have all, I think, independently, individually talked about is I suspect that for many people, we are getting down to like the cost that they're selling this shit for is more or less the break-even point for them on just even doing it in the first place. I think we're just hitting their costs, you know?
I think that's absolutely true.
So I think that we're at the bottom. So my question to you guys is like, is do you think that to be the case? And if it sounds like we all think that is the case. And if so, like, do you think there's going to be a period where there's like desperation selling, where the people who are selling it for maybe $100 or $200 or $300 a pound less than what they really should be, just because they're trying to get any form of revenue in, you know, like, do you think that like pushes prices down or, you know what I mean? Like what do you guys see as that? And I also, just seconding everything you guys said earlier, I also agree that the market, it matured really, really quick. I think a lot faster than all of us. It lost its parents and has like a 3-year-old baby, you know what I mean? Like, or 3-year-old little brother, you know, like it's got some growing up to do, and it's going to be that way for a minute, you know? So like, that's where it's at, you know? And I think that like what I found is I don't think the consumer on weed, like, it ain't like gas. Like, people aren't going to go to the dispensary the next day and be like, oh, this shit's twice as much. Yeah, that makes sense. Like, that'll never fucking happen. You know, like once it's low, it's low. If it even goes up like a dollar, like, they come at the retailer like so fucking hard, you know? So like, I'm just wondering, like, where do you guys see the pricing, and how much of that do you guys think is based on oversupply, and how much of it is based on like just, I don't know. What do you guys see as the, what's going on with the price? Is this the bottom? And if not, where is the bottom in your guys' opinion?
Go ahead, Kyle. I'll let you, your business and craft, you're so much closer to it than I am.
Sure. So I think that we probably are at the bottom right now. I see quality product going for around $1,400 a pound, maybe, you know, maybe $1,600 a pound at the top. But I think people are comfy buying nice, good, over 20% testing pounds at $1,400 right now. I think that we are in a state of oversaturation because of production. And to answer your question about whether it's going to get better, I really don't think it will get better. I think that, as you said, the price is basically where it's at to stay. Realistically, not only does a customer not going to want to pay crazy amount more for a product they just got the day before at a set price, but the actual store, once they're tucked into pricing things accordingly at a certain wholesale price, it's hard to get them back on board if you're going to add £300 or £400 or $300, $400 onto a wholesale pound. Now, I think that, and if you tuned in last week, folks, you know, we talked about deli style and the threat of losing bulk pounds. If that is to go through and be added onto a producer's costs at a time when the wholesale price is where it's at, that's going to pull some people under for sure. And so that, and frankly, that would be a win for the Chads, because it would put the single class C and lower guys to a price point. Because, I mean, let's be real. Most of those people do not have an on-site processor. They, in many cases, those people don't even have retail. So it would just be catastrophic.
No, I agree with that. I will say I saw a snippet from a Mirror's news article where Director Brisbois was quoted saying, "The response was overwhelming and we have no plans to change our current system to go away from a deli style availability." So it looks as if the people won that one, as far as I'm concerned. If the MRA sticks with that and we retain the ability to sell deli style, that's great. If for all the reasons Kyle said, as well as for reasons of consumer satisfaction too.
Yeah. Part, and you know,
go ahead.
I was going to say shame.
Chris, I'm up. You're the host. You go.
No, you go, man. You go.
As far as pricing goes, I see there's a little bit more room for pricing to drop. I believe desperation selling. I come from the furniture and the fashion industries prior to coming to cannabis, and I've got a ton of retail experience. And I have seen industries on the decline where there's desperation selling, whereas, as Chris described earlier, you're essentially what's referred to as dumping product on the market. You're selling it for less than it cost you to produce it. You could do this for a number of different reasons. Sometimes people do that to gain a brand recognition or to capture a market share. They're willing to take a temporary hit for a long-term investment. But mostly people do that when they're about to shut their doors and they're trying to find a way to get whatever revenue can be squeezed out of whatever inventory they have remaining, because that's what their shareholders and the guys who operate the business by remote control from Canada or from New York State, what those guys have decided that they need to do in order to liquidate assets. So I believe that those things, as Chris suggested, those people dumping cannabis on the marketplace are going to continue to cause disruption. And if we're looking at companies going out of business, not just in June, but throughout the entirety of 2022, there'll be that market disruption going on till the end of the season, possibly even into 2023.
For sure. That's a super, I think that's probably right on, man. Cause I think, you know, a lot of these people have never been making money anyway. So to them, like another month of losing, you know, to try to squeeze out some revenue, like that makes, it actually makes sense. You know, they're at least getting something out of it. So no, I was just going to say, like, it's awesome that the deli flower thing seems to be dead, and shame on all those people who went out there and shamelessly advocated for this policy that would have been severely detrimental to the smallest operators and like the most closely similar to caregivers in like the community that all of us started from, to see people out there that I like and you're liked and respected before this, like, out there advocating for prepackaged, just because it would be like a, I know that they have their bullshit reasons for it that they have to like to give off when they're doing it, but it's because they're the prepackaged people and they do shit like that. And they, you know what I mean? Like, and for what it's worth, like at Redemption, you know, like, we most of our shit is prepackaged, and not one time did anybody who was even remotely affiliated with the group were they like, "Oh, this would be awesome. We should, like, you know, we should support a ban on deli flour because it's against the whole principles of what this whole fucking system was based on. It's just absolutely crazy that people are willing to go out there and sell out their own personal integrity to make a few bucks. And then luckily they weren't even successful on it. So they just exposed themselves. So just, it's been a crazy process. And just another plug, thank you to everybody who did all the public testimony and all the work on that. Like, you know, Roy Liskey, he was our guest last cycle, and he did a great deal in that. And, you know, he talked to a lot of folks, and I sent all of his talking points and everything to a couple other store owners that showed up and stuff. So I know he was a big part in that. So just a little bit of work on this stuff can really go a long way. It's a little example for everybody.
Chris, I was really surprised that this boof disguise program was even suggested by the CRA, you know? And then when you think about it a little bit more closely, I'm not surprised, because this is a manipulation by, at least seems to be, a manipulation by larger players to eliminate clearly the more qualified and the better cannabis producers who like to show their product in big jars where you can see how beautiful and perfect the nugs are. And, you know, somebody waves a lid at you and you get that scent, and now all of a sudden you're emotionally attached to that cannabis. You know, I got a lot of prepackaged stuff laying around me right now, and I can't smell any of it. None of it's really galling to me other than a brand name and a strain name. I was asked the other day about Redemption Success and whether I thought that it was because we had quality flower or because we have a compelling story. In my experience in retail environments, most people don't know our story, but a lot of people know our flower. So the key, as Chris mentioned, is maintaining that fire status for your flower, even though you're competing at a $1,400 a pound level, as Kyle described.
Yeah. If these people focused on growing good flower, getting the environment dialed in and making a good brand and a good product and doing things right, if they spent as much time worrying about that as they do figuring out ways to dick over the small guy and to like do like these just hugely anti-capitalist, anti-American, like just super fucked up business, you know, predatory business moves. Like if they spent nearly the amount of time doing that, like they would just, everything would take care of itself, man. You know, like then we would all actually have to worry that they'd be putting us out of business, you know?
Yeah. But Chris, that's a bunch of Chads out there trying to run the cannabis industry the way that they run the t-shirt industry, the furniture industry, the banana industry. When something comes up, you attack it as an enemy. And if they feel like caregivers right now are taking away market share from them, they're going to attack it as an enemy. But we know that the regulated and the unregulated market are not necessarily enemies, that they coexist, and that many people, myself included, use both markets as we choose. Which should really be driving the regulated market to a greater level of professionalism. But instead, I think it's easier to just default to hate and to pay people to try and attack things than it is to actually pump up yourself as a positive player.
For sure. Ooh, looks like we looks like we lost Kyle.
The truth of our words set him free.
Yeah, he was like, I gotta get out of here. No, I'm sure it's a technical issue. He'll be, oh, there he is.
It sure is, of course.
Yep. It's like, surprise, Kyle got a job at Viridis. He's out.
Don't even start that rumor. Oh, that's bad thing to say. You know, it disgusts me. And you mentioned Viridis, and there's a big article that you called my attention to from M Live today talking about some of the confounding situations we have here in Michigan regarding
that
testing.
Is absurd.
And some of the ridiculous claims being made by some of the flower products on the market of a THC content that approaches or exceeds 50%.
Cannabinoids, not THC. That is a very important, but that's still absurd. That's still fucking crazy.
Yeah. So at this point, we want people to have confidence in the regulated marketplace. We want them to be able to go into a store and ask for redemption and feel confident with that. But there's a lot of reasons for those skeptics to be even more skeptical.
For sure, man. And that's kind of a good transition to what I want. A couple of the things I was hoping to talk with you is like, I guess the meat and potatoes of this show is what's going on with testing and Viridis. And then also just kind of the larger landscape of just the market, other than like the pricing, just like there's some consolidation. There's like some, definitely some changes on like with the value of things on real estate and other things that are associated with the industry. But with the Viridis thing here, so the article, which I really, everybody should go read, it's in Grandpa's Press and MLive, one of the things that they're talking about is the Spot ran these strains independently. Like somebody went and bought it from the store, and you know, if you've been lucky enough not to smoke any weed from Loom, it comes in a like tuna can, you know, style, the Nitro Seal,
I think 21
jar, actually. I believe. And so they went and bought sealed ones and did a test, and they came back like, I think it was 24 or 23.4 or something like that percent THC on it. So that's a huge spread. Holy shit. I think you're right. I think it actually was 23 total. So that's like basically like a 20 point, you know, or a 30 point spread, you know, like that's insane. So the article talks about that, and as it talks about that, it lays out the I guess facts, information that basically the Viridis is using this method that's not accredited by the state, that they don't really know about or support, and that seems to just be okay. But it definitely, and I know people that have done R&D tests with Viridis, like that shit always tests like 5 to 10% higher on THC all the time. Like in this article, it talks about like anytime there's a testing over 30% THC, the state does an audit on it or makes the lab do an audit. So if it's Viridis doing a dirty test and they just do another dirty test to calibrate it, you know, it doesn't make sense. But they do that, and Viridis has like, you know, everyone, I encourage everyone to read the article, but I want to say something like 6 or 7 times the amount of like every, you know, everyone else's rate of having THC this high. So obviously like something's up, and the state can't really do anything about it. Like they've tried to get Viridis to comply and tell them about shit, or, you know, the recall got overthrown in court. So basically the article is saying that like Viridis basically just does whatever they want. And there's no oversight for that. Like, I guess in a lot of other industries, it was saying there's like these labs that are like their only client is the state, and they're like a reference lab. And so like whenever this stuff comes up, they would just send that test to, or that sample to the reference lab, and the reference lab, they work for the state. They're not paid off by any of these chads or anything. So they don't really have a dog in this fight, and they just do it using, I guess, best science. So like that doesn't exist. So a lot of this shit just doesn't exist in our industry. And on top of that, like we kind of talked about with the Detroit ordinance and some other things, like, for the most part in America, like if you can win in court, you can basically do whatever the fuck you want, whether it's the law or not. Like you can just, it's, you know, and access to money and capital does a lot of that. So that's kind of that's my take on this article. But one of the things that I think makes it really relatable to this and my long-winded question on that is, what do you guys see in the market when so many of the people use this lab? And so many of them are the big companies and the MCMA and like the boo factories and stuff. Like if they're using this lab that's artificially like inflating the THC, that's unfortunately, the price of our market is very mature, but the information and education aspect for the customers is not mature yet. So they are just pricing or purchasing based on THC. So, you know, we have this disconnect where these bad actors are using the shitty lab to have artificially high THC, and that's what custies want. And so then that's, if you're almost sure, at like at an extreme disadvantage, if you happen to be a small guy and you are running with integrity, you know what I mean? So I guess like that's one of the connections I want to make, and just kind of,
a point I want to make real
quick. What do you guys see on that? And there's some good people that test Viridis that I have no,
that's what custies want. Now,
I can't understand why they do it.
Think
like,
about
I have
THC
to imagine that goes into
what it truly means,
the nexus on that, you know,
strain that you're smoking. You know, you have one strain in particular that may test at 17%, and you have strain 2 that might test at 21%, for example. The customer thinks that strain gets them 4% higher. You know what I mean? So, part of this problem and part of the appeal that Viridis is presented by having these tests that are crazy, crazy high is because the customer has been trained in their head to purchase that way. So I think this is a call to action for people to do more educationally in the retail and as far as their own flower testing for terpenes. You know, if we can change the customer's mindset on how they purchase, then THC crazy high tests and Virtus Lab wouldn't matter as much. You know what I mean? I know that's not something that happens overnight, certainly. That's going to be a long, long fight. And Virtus might even be out of the race by the time that fight actually is accomplished. But it's just something conscientiously we should think about, you know, more often.
I'll say this, all of the companies that are utilizing Virtus in order to get those astronomically high THC numbers are screwing themselves, and I'll tell you why. Let's project out 1 year in advance, this day, 2023. I believe that between now and then, the Cannabis Regulatory Agency will have some enforcement action on Virtus. I keep hearing from them every month when I'm part of the Consumer Connection and we talk to the director and his staff about these things. And every month we talk about freaking testing. And I believe that there is some action that's impending against Virtus. So here, if you've got a bunch of companies that have trained people not to respect their brand name, but to respect their THC percentage, then their THC percentage drops down to normal levels, 28, 27, as Virtus gets smacked around for their abnormal laboratory procedures. Now you've got a company who was used to selling based on THC that now has to sell based on quality and reputation, and they haven't established either. So what you're seeing is the people who are already able to survive in the market at that 28%, when all the rest of those guys drop down to that level, the pre-existing 28% guys are going to be successful. And those folks who trained their customer base to rely on the highest THC percentage are going to have that training
likely the story we'll see.
Because no one has brand loyalty. Their loyalty is to a percentage, not to a company.
No, for sure, man. And I mean, just another just to piggyback onto that is like, what happens when all of your weed is part of like the next largest recall of cannabis in the world? You know what I mean? Like that stuff, people don't like forget that shit. You know what I'm saying? The market's young enough right now that there's enough new people coming into it every day as consumers that like you can get away with having some shit on your name for a while. But eventually as things even out, like, you know, it's just it's crazy to me to think actually, because some of these people aren't, it's not just the Brads and Chads. Like Virtus controls like something like upwards of 50 or 60% of the market. Right. So that means it's a lot of the good guys too. And it's a lot of the former good guys too. And a lot of these folks, like they're going to get they're normal. They're not normal. I mean, they're caregivers and stuff. And some of them, like, you know, they put their whole lives into building these businesses and these companies and stuff. And then they put it all on the line, and then they trash all of it by being, first of all, by even fucking around with these dirty ass cops. And then two, they're doing like junk science that for sure is going to get them like on some sort of like, you know, recall, or you know what I mean? It's just crazy that you would do all this work and then just waste it, just throw it all away like that, you know?
Chris, it's important for your viewers to remember that during the testimony, during the hearing for the Virtus lawsuit that was held, the Cannabis Regulatory Agency, at that time the Marijuana Regulatory Agency, their scientist Claire Patterson said loudly and definitively that Virtus has a history of passing people for microbial infestations or for other types of macrobiological issues where other labs had failed them. And she says, and if you fail a lab on Tuesday, but then you're passed by another lab on Thursday, there was no time to remediate that or to change the actual cannabis itself. So the question becomes, what did the two labs do differently to take the same sample and result in a different discussion? And when they see that happening repeatedly over a long period of time, what Chris said is exactly correct. If you get wrapped up in one of those recalls, because they're not going to recall for poor THC reporting, they'll make them fix their program, but that's not a health-related issue. But Aspergillus and some of the others, they are. And that could result in a huge recall, as we've already seen. And some of the people who really are living right on the knife's edge of success or failure are going to unfortunately get tipped in the wrong direction because they put their trust in a lab that doesn't deserve their trust.
But God, wouldn't you rather just go out of business for being a shitty business person as opposed to going out of business for putting all these sick people's health at risk using using like the Ponzi scheme, dirty cop lab. I mean, just come on, man. When you say it out loud,
you can recover from one, you can't, Chris, right? I mean, you're forever stained.
Yeah, the weed one, it's like, oh man, the market was fucking flooded. I thought it was going to be $3,200 pounds forever. You know what I mean? Like, there's a bunch of people who are going to go out of business that are like, yeah, I get it, fam, you know? But you know, man, just being like, yeah, I completely sold out so I could get like an extra 2 months of selling my mids out. Yeah. That ain't it, fam. You know, like, people don't want to hear that shit, you know? And it's just crazy that people would trash their entire, integrity, you know? Like, just,
well, but you talked about it before, Chris, too, the advent of multi-state operators coming to Michigan to try and operate businesses, essentially, as I talked about, on remote control from Canada or New York State. And that kind of an attitude and mentality might work other places. But if you're not running your business at a ground level here in Michigan, or if you've brought people in from other states that didn't really have any connection to Michigan, nor do they really appreciate or understand our market and the unique way that things are done around here, you set yourself up for this problem. You really did. And I have a hard time being sympathetic. Just like I asked Tom Levine this question the other day. All of these candidates for governor who turned in petition signatures where they have thousands of petition signatures, which are invalid because they didn't even do the basics, not even the basics of looking over the sheets before they gave them to the gov.
Bro, even we did that. And am I legalized?
No sympathy for these people whatsoever. Man. Come on. I remember Kyle and Chris with all these petitions laid out in the office up at Jeff Hank's place in Lansing, looking over every petition sheet, every single sheet got.
Bro, we had Mark Grebner, which if you guys are any political junkies, like, homie is like the legend. He like invented like the direct mail list and like the walk list and all of like the voter data stuff. Like, he's like really, really big in that. And we had his firm scan all of the signatures, and like, you know, people would go over and like they would be like, oh, Tom Johnson of 123 Main Street. And Adrian, he signed this shit already. And like, we'd figure out that one was a fraudulent one. You know what I mean? Or one was a duplicate.
You're welcome, Chad.
We would regularly fire like entire offices worth of petitioners that were trying to turn in fraud and shit. Like, this is like a big part of the petition industry. And you're right, man. It's a very, it's a very similar thing, Rick. Like, you know, these Chads come in with such hubris, you know, and they think that it's going to be, they think it's going to be a way, and it's not, you know? And so like, it's just unfortunate to see, man, people like, trading off their integrity long-term for short-term, not even profits. Some of these people, it's just short-term, just keeping the fucking lights on for another 3 months. You know
what I mean? A lot of these decisions are not being made by the local guys. I mean, we give shit to the people that we see, but a lot of times they're just doing what they're told to by their bosses behind them. Now, it doesn't excuse bad behavior. It really doesn't. But the fact of the matter is, a lot of these guys don't have the intent. They don't have the intent to defraud people. They don't have the intent to try and disrupt the market by selling cannabis at less than they paid to grow it, or firing entire staffs of people like Terrapin, you know, getting rid of entire cultivation operations. They don't intend to do that. They're just the unfortunate middleman. Having served that role for a couple decades in retail, I know how tough it is.
No, man. So that's a good segue. So we kind of wanted to have a little bit of a recap here on the way out of there's been some big moves on that. And I think it definitely impacts the consumer like a lot. So as you alluded to, Terrapin is a multi-state, you know, they're leaving Michigan. And they only had a wholesale footprint. They didn't have any retail establishments here yet. So there's kind of been a few mergers and acquisitions and people heading out. So we thought we would do a little rich Chad, poor Chad, you know, kind of check in here and kind of talk about these things and what we think it means. It's not, and I get mostly from us, it's doom and gloom, like, these Chads and stuff, but there's actually some mixed news on here. Like, some of it's not all as bad as we're I guess the last couple minutes made it seem, you know, like the blade cuts both ways, right? And so I think like one of the things I wanted to talk about and hear you guys' input on is, I think a success is Redbud Roots, no more, you know, retail, pulling out of retail. And I believe most, if not all those stores are Great Lakes Holistic stores, which is run by Jacob, the homie. And, you know, like the shit's just, you know, those stores are, they fucking bang, you know, he knows what he's doing. He's a local, it's from the community and stuff. And I think that's awesome. You know, like this is going to be one of the most, one of the premier provisioning center chains in the state. He's doing it, picking up the footprint of people who kind of like, you know, the people that me and Rick were just describing, people who walked in and they thought it was going to be crazy. And for a minute it was, you know, when they had the only dispensary in Muskegon, you know, you drive up there and it was like a Chick-fil-A, man. It was insane. You know, there's people everywhere. And as soon as that artificial advantage goes away Muskegon became a very competitive market, and some of these people who are there doing it, you know, they know what they're doing, and they've been doing it since caregiver days, and they're used to doing it in a competitive market, and you know, they got their shit blasted, you know. And so I think that this is a good example. So what do you guys think of that? Like, what do you guys see as one of the themes? I think that when we talk about a lot of these people going out of business and mergers, is what I'm tending to see is like the really highly capital extensive stuff, like the big cultivations and processing and stuff, things that have a big footprint, like those MSOs and like the people that are maybe new or walking into it, they seem to be having the toughest time. And I think on the retail front of it, like some of them have a better job at holding on. And I'm just wondering like what you guys see as the breakdown. And then me and Kyle have a list.
Well, I think
so, like, as we kind of talk about
things,
this, we'll burn through the ones that we
like
think
you had mentioned. It is
on. So what do you
issue?
What are you seeing on this, Kyle? And like, what do you think
on these MSOs, what do you
think this means for the future
in
general about
startups?
The industry
started here. They don't understand the long history of the caregiver system and the time and effort that people have put in, kind of already figuring out the end result of what this legalized market would become. 2 years ago, they've already, you know, knew what to expect and kind of how these markets would play out just because of the way things used to be in Lansing and other big places. But another point, I think that some of these bigger places are falling out, especially at the retail level, is that they're trying to sell a store with their products only. I think that is a bad approach, because what I've come to know after a year of owning my own retail and a year and a half of operating Meds Cafe in Lowell, which at the time was the very first retail store in Kent County, crazy, insane days at the beginning of COVID. What I've come to discover is that people want new, fresh drops weekly. People want the newest and latest thing from multiple companies. And if they come back, yeah, they might find that one strain that you have in concentrate or flower that they really enjoy. But after a while, they're going to get sick of buying that, and they're going to get sick of you dropping one or two new strains every 3 months when other stores have 90 new products biweekly. Mm-hmm.
You know, restaurants do daily specials for exactly that reason, Kyle. You get the regulars that come in that already are familiar with the menu. They want something that's brand new. I think it's, first of all, our industry can use success stories, as many success stories as we can find for people that we think deserve to have their story told. We should be sharing it. And when Great Lakes is able to snatch up someone else's chain and grow, I think we, you know, that's a great one to share. I also think it gives hope that there's opportunity for other caregiver derived businesses here in the state to be able to do the same thing. We all know in the next few months, there's probably going to be a lot of cannabis retail and cultivation facilities up for sale. And that the more there are for sale, the lower the price gets. And it becomes more achievable at that point for someone, maybe a group of caregivers that get together to be able to afford to jump into the industry. Now that licensing costs are down to a much more reasonable level than they were during the first or and second year of the industry. So I'm encouraged by the fact that we have some rollover and some change. And I'm also not
well over 100 retail.
Some of its multi-state operators. In Florida, they have a limited license network, and Trulieve has, I think, I don't know, 50% or 60% of all of the cannabis licenses in the state of Florida. So that's a company, 150 some, I think. And that means they get to dictate the price of cannabis in the state of Florida because they're the dominant retail presence. We don't allow that in the state of Michigan. I love that about us. It also makes for some turbulent times. As Chris
No, said. It gives and takes, you know what I mean? So, like, I think that's one of the, that's the rub, right? Is that it's to be able to play ball for the small guy, like the big guy has to have a pretty, they still get the big guy advantage, you know? So like, that's the ecosystem we're in, you know? So I think one of the things too, that I want to highlight on that is, I think both of you guys really hit it on the head. Cause like what I've noticed is, cause I couldn't really quite put my finger on it, but I think Kyle, you summed it up really well, is I do see a couple of the multi-states or a couple of the proverbial Chads, you know, like people that aren't really like weed people and stuff. And like some of them have like, you know, maybe small chains or something. They have like two, three or four or whatever. And sometimes those guys seem to be doing pretty well. And I'm like, they have capital they can buy and, you know, they can prop themselves up. But now that I realize it, I think it through, like many of these people aren't like that, like they're not necessarily vertically integrated. Like maybe they have a grow or maybe they don't, or maybe they don't have any of them. So they are people that are, I think, just getting good at being retailers, kind of like what Kyle's laying out is like, they were like, we need to buy a bunch of shit and sell it, you know, like anything else. Like, you know, we need to have like a nice variety and offer a, you know, an assortment of products that people want regularly. Right. So I think that's definitely what is going on, because some of the bigger ones that are having a hard time, like their entire business model is wrapped up on selling all of their mids in their stores. And if they can't do that, like that's a big problem. So that leads me to the flip side of that is one of the people who's doing well on that is LiveWell from Colorado. And Rick, are they a confirmed MCMA member or just suspected?
Suspected. Actually, I'm hearing rumors that the MCMA is down to only two members left, High Life, which is Tom Chilani's group, and one other. That would be a huge big win for our side if that particular monster was defanged.
I'm doing a roundtable tomorrow with the chief compliance and legal officer from Flourish. I'll dead ass, bro. I'll ask her if they're still members. We'll see what they say.
Yep. MCMA, of course, Michigan Cannabis Manufacturers Association, for those viewers who may not be familiar, and they are the ones leading the charge on the anti-caregiver legislation, which is why we hate them.
Yeah. So anyways, what they're picking up retails, these guys from Colorado, and they've picked up one in Sheboygan. I suspect they're going after more. But they're doing really well, and they're selling a lot of what I presume to be pre-remediated flower. It's pretty high testing. I believe that they also use Viridis, but you know, they're on a tear, man. Like they're crushing in a few stores, especially up north, and definitely in markets where it's not as competitive, or maybe some of the other operators that they're competing against aren't the most sophisticated, or you know, they're new to the market. So I'm definitely seeing some of that. And then like another proverbial rich Chad is, although I've never seen a Skymint store like busy or really even used by marijuana customers, you know, but I visibly see them out there, but Skymint and that's a Green Peak International. And everybody who was paying attention, like there was like a really nasty campaign with them. Like the very first kind of big assault on caregivers, they ran all these bullshit billboards and stuff a couple years ago. It was super insane. But this company's bought the 315 chain of dispensaries, which those were all like, basically just a play to grab real estate to make this deal happen anyways, I feel like. But that's like that's a huge advantage now for Skymint, which has a lot of capacity for the market. Like I forget the percentage that they talk about, but it's like a lot. Like they have a lot of capacity. And so now they have like all of these 315 locations to put their shit in. So they're another group that I think
Common Citizen
is
and Live dispensaries
relatively good. And then there's been some other large mergers, like the folks at Gage merged with another group. So you know, things are happening. So what? Yes.
Which is different from live well. Live and live well are different. Yes.
Both bad, different ways. Right. So I think like, what do you guys think that means for the consumer? Like, cause eventually like we're getting to the point now where the market's getting smaller. And I guess like, kind of related to that is what do you guys see as like the outlook for the small guy? And what do you think the market looks like for them over the next couple of years? And I guess in your opinions, what are the kinds of things that these operators can do to stand out and to continue to be successful and to earn more of that market share? You know, how do you see that road being laid out for people? What do you think, Rick?
I'll tell you, SkyMint in Bay City posted online that they are permanently closed. So we're seeing SkyMint, at least in some ways, retracting their retail footprint. This makes sense, though, if you consider that in places where SkyMint and 315 may have had competing stores or stores within the same marketplace, it's fun to have two stores in the same marketplace, but it's also duplicative as far as expenses and costs. And in a competitive market, it's just not done in most cases. So we might see those extra facilities that are getting shut down be made available at inexpensive prices for some of the mom and pops that really have tried to get into this industry and been denied an opportunity. I'll say that it's going to be super tough for anybody that want to try and get into a new community that just opens up licensing, because the powers that be, the people that are going to stay in Michigan, are still trying to jump on every opportunity for a new market. So who's the guys up north that we just were complaining about not that long ago that work with the Indian tribes all the time? Loom. Mm-hmm. Loom is notorious for stepping into brand new places. And if they are not awarded a license in that scheme, then they sue until they get one. So it's tough for me to imagine that in emergent markets, the little guy's going to have much of a chance to fight, but it's in those existing markets where somebody maybe didn't succeed, or because of a merger, they no longer need that retail. I think that gives opportunity.
I would just add.
Otherwise, all of those retail licenses are locked right up, and nobody can get in.
Hang on tight if you're.
Because once the zoning is satisfied, small guys operating, you've reached the max.
It's going to be rough waters for a little while, but I think that you know, the cream will rise to the top, and the bad MCMA players will lose ultimately.
So here's what I would say too. If you look at nationwide, the places people are going for tourism is changing. Lake Mead is really super low. Some of the other places that used to attract folks because of the wildlands are either burned or inaccessible. There are a change in the way Americans vacate, and we are going to vacation in Michigan and the Great Lakes a lot more. And if you can last, as Kyle mentioned, through the next couple of years, our cannabis tourism is going to be through the roof. Our opportunities in the city of Detroit are going to continue to grow. I firmly believe that even they can't get in their own way forever. Sooner or later, something good's going to happen in the city, and that's just going to mean a burst of new revenue for people here in Michigan and new opportunities. So if you can last, man, I mean, the future does still look pretty bright. We talked about some negative stuff earlier, but as Chris said, I mean, wow, this really is just a very dynamic and hopeful market.
Yeah, I agree, man. We haven't even really scratched the the surface on a lot of like the ancillary stuff, the license ancillary stuff, like consumption events are still pretty new. Like consumption lounges and like the models that are out there are great, and I'm glad people are doing it. But I don't even think that's being done at like where it'll eventually be. I foresee like that industry being like it's. I was actually up in the UP last week, visiting some stores and stuff, and like, yeah, man, like the Western UP, like Porcupine Mountains, Lake of the Clouds, like there's no stores there. There's a lot of places that like are really heavy in tourism that I think somebody eventually is going to run like a consumption lounge, maybe attached to like a a little resort and stuff like that, you know, and like, I think like running a dispo out of it, some people might even like run these seasonally, you know? So I think that there's a resurgence, and I don't know that the looms of the world are going to like, go operate that, you know what I mean? Like they would do like, so I think a big part of it is trying to get like that license class to be somewhat like the micro business, man, where it like, it kind of restricts the kinds of folks and people that would apply for it, and makes it more accessible just for the small operators. That's what that would be. I think I'm hopeful that that's how it rolls out long term. You know,
Chris, that brings me to a question about delivery services, because we know that a company like Ease that does delivery can pick up from one dispensary and then drop off to a customer someplace in places where there's not a regular retailer. There could be a delivery service that has just a really extended range. They deliver in this direction on Wednesdays, to this direction on Fridays. It almost opens up another entrepreneurial type, right? I mean,
yeah, no, for sure. So I think that it's kind of, if I agree, if you can hold on, and I also agree with Kyle, it's going to be fucking bumpy, but if you can hold on and make it work for a few years, eventually the stuff will level out. And honestly, I don't know that it will get too much worse. I mean, it's going to get bad, but like, it's been bad for a minute, you know. If you're a standalone, you know, if you're a standalone cultivator or something, and you're just selling bulk flower out there, like, it's really tough, man. You know, it's like super, super tough. So I think that's kind of where I see that going too. But I agree, man. I think there's some good opportunities. I don't think it necessarily has to be all doom and gloom, you know. Like we haven't even really started to see the start of the micro businesses. And I don't think there's even one of the new class of micro businesses out there yet.
I think that's a natural fit if you're going to be anywhere near a casino. If you've got a social consumption lounge that's off casino property, people come to the casino, they got bucks in their pocket, they want to be able to consume cannabis, but they can't on the actual federally regulated property.
I agree.
I mean, completely. And there are casinos all over Michigan. So whether tribal entities operate these social consumption lounges or whether other entrepreneurs do, I just think it's a natural mix. It's a natural pair. Peanut butter and jelly, baby.
For sure. So yeah, no, I kind of just kind of wanted to talk about it. You know, there's a lot of crazy stuff. I mean, we hear a lot of rumors about people that might be going out too, but I didn't really want to even like talk about it, because you know what I mean? Like it's who even knows. But I think, you know, these are the things that verifiable, like this shit happened. It does suck for all the people who work there. I feel bad for that, because a lot of these people really do are like maybe passionate, knowledgeable marijuana people, and like they're just trying to get a job, man. They're trying to work in the industry. Like they might not necessarily be walking into it for like the abject hate in their heart that we have for some of these guys, you know? So like that's I feel bad for that, but I think ultimately this is the growing pains of the market, and this is the play Chad games, win Chad prizes, man. You know what I mean? Like that's what they got absolutely custied on that property too in Grand Rapids. Like they paid so much fucking money for it. And so it's just you know, this is what happened. They thought they were gonna come in with a lot of money and be one of the biggest cultivators and run shit, and you know what I mean? Like, and it didn't work out like that. Like I'm sure it didn't work out how they thought, you know, and that's yeah, man. So that's kind of where we're at. And I agree that it's starting to get more bumpy, which is crazy because it's been bumpy for a minute. And yeah, just really interesting times. And, you know, we'll have to have you on in like 6 or 8 months, man, Rick, and talk about the, like where we're at, like, you know, like, yeah, I was going to say, Rick, what do you think the ounce price is in 6 months? We'll come back and see how, right now. So me and Kyle were talking about it when you were fixing your internet. We suspect, we know there's an MRA report. We just couldn't find it because we're stoners, but we suspect that the average ounce price retail is floating like 130 to 150. You say that's pretty.
Last figure I saw was 146, and that was for March. So we've had April and May's report. So I'm certain that it's down to the 130 level now. I don't expect it to go lower than 120. To be honest with you, I'm not some kind of a stock market picker or predictor or guy like that. But when I look at what's on the market and how that rapid fall in price has sort of started to slow, started to parachute a little bit, because as you've mentioned, we're close to fucking bottom. I don't think it'll go lower than 120. So in 6 months, though, I bet it will be between 135 and 120. I read it will be down low.
Still. All right, man. I'm writing it down. We'll see in 6 months. Hey, one thing too. I'm looking at the comments. So Tyler Dutchers there saying, we need podcasts showing these small good brands. Every time we say the bad guys' names, it's just more marketing for them. So, you know, that's actually something that we've been thinking about, that is like, how do we do that? And how do we do that in a way that's not like, because here's the thing, man, is like, I'm afraid that it's going to turn into like, let me just bring all my boys' companies on here and shit, which is cool. And all of them are doing things the right way. We just got to try to figure out like a system for that. You know what I mean? Like some sort of like the basic check marks, like, hey, yeah, we don't do this shit. We don't Willow. We don't, you know what I mean? Like we're still trying to figure that out. And just we're stoners, man. We're trying. I know that's a thing that sometimes that we come to, we can, if you can believe it, I've been called negative about this shit. You know what I mean? So like we need to, that's not lost on me, man. So I know that we need to be better about that, because there are a lot of people doing things the right way. And honestly, that's like at the core of what a lot of the frustration that I and I imagine Rick and Kyle have on this stuff is that there are a lot of people doing it the right way, that are putting out a good product, that are doing it with integrity, that don't give a shit about THC, that are doing like just growing good cannabis that people want. And they're getting affected by the market. And anytime these chads do this like predatory stuff, it makes the system harder to deal with at the level for producers and cultivators, for everybody, you know. So like it's that's kind of where it comes from, is that like, you know, we're running under the baseline that most people who are in our community, in our constituency, they are doing things the right way. That's why whenever these chads do this egregious behavior that's so fucked up, it's so insane, because I consider that like very outside the norm. So I definitely agree, and it's something that we're working on. I didn't want you to think that we were ignoring that, or I don't want anyone to think that it's just like a beat down. I realized that we started the tone off wrong with March Chadness and stuff. That was fun.
Come on, regret that, man. Shit.
It was good. It was good. But we probably should have started in February and like slow rolled into that. You know, I've done a couple nice ones, had a couple. So this is something that we're going to work on and maybe try to work into like bringing brands on to showcase them as guests, or maybe like on as a side piece to the meat and potatoes of the show, and just give them an opportunity to tell people about their brand and why they think it fits in with what we're talking about, and tell people about how they don't remediate, or how they don't, you know, ideologically how they're down for this shit. And because I think people want to support people that support things they care about in their constituencies. But if we're not giving people a platform for that, then you know, we are also part of doing a disservice. So I definitely want
to
be.
Let me just say this though, although it's kind of tough to praise someone for just being an everyday good guy, right? But a lot of these everyday good guys do wonderful special events. So when somebody who really deserves a little extra recognition has a special event, it's an opportunity to recognize them, call attention to the event, maybe give them a little PR for that particular thing.
Absolutely.
But that way you're not obligated to try and, you know, select somebody, because that's always then there's resentment and regret. And how come you could pick that guy before
I think that's a great idea
to get on your show, Kyle? I thought we were tight, you know? So when people do something spectacular, let's talk about the spectacular. And I think there's enough of that going around right now to fill a show.
Love to have you, man.
For sure. So, I've been thinking about that a lot, man. So thanks for everybody for indulging me on that. And Rick, thanks for being on the show, man.
Maybe someday it won't be necessary.
Really a good time. And we're going to try to have a kinder, gentler Chad watch, you know?
Why?
I'm just fucking kidding, man. They all know we're not going to do that, man. But we are going to. Maybe, yeah.
Don't wait 6 months to bring me back either, guys. Damn it.
One day I can hang up my hater bong, and we can, you know, go back to. No, so that will never happen. These chads will never stop. Like,
Well, and you know what? There's no shortage of Chads in other states too. Although we're very Michigan focused, or you guys are on this particular program, things that happen outside our borders absolutely affect us too. And some of these Chads that are trying to lobby the national legislature for rules that we might believe are really negative, like opening up our borders to all this Oregon 3-year oversupply of moldy sat on the shelf boof that they would love to ship over here for $10 an ounce. You know, we see Chads in all aspects of life, and shortage of material to cover.
Our Chads are actually kind of like subdued. Like they know about, you know what I mean? Like they know about this kind of stuff and they know that people don't like that. But like in other states where there's not like there's never a caregiver scene or any like real community, like these guys, it's like Chad's gone wild. They can do whatever the fuck they want. There's no one to be like, hey, that seems fucked up or, you know, unethical or like against kind of like anything we're doing. Like, and it's crazy. So I actually talked to a lot of people that I would consider like doing the Chad Watch role and in other states, you know, like I talked to these guys in Florida and Connecticut, and Connecticut's actually doing a crazy, they're like revamping their systems right now. And it's like going to be super fucked up. You know what I mean? Like they're doing like crazy social equity, which is good, you know, but it's like, it's been perverted in a sense where like people can just go like, the big companies just go and like shop out social equity applicants. It's like super, it doesn't feel good. Right. You know? So like, but, and then like the testing stuff. So like there's people, thank God, that are doing this, this work in other states. It's actually something we've thought about is maybe doing like a Chad Watch USA edition, you know, and like have some of these folks from other states. Cause like some of the stuff that's happening in their states, I'm like, holy shit, man. Like that sounds, you should move to Michigan. I don't know what to say. You know, like some of it's just really bad. So as bad as it is here, like it could be worse, like a lot worse.
I would love to see Nate Darling do an intro video for Chad Watch USA. Dun, dun, dun. That would just be, he'd do such a great job with that.
Yeah, you know? Dude, Chad's across America.
That's it. Oh my gosh. Yeah. No, what a great time we've had. And we've talked about some important stuff too. And maybe we're a little harsh on the particular people that deserve it. But fact of the matter is all of us have nothing but the best for the industry at our heart. And what we're trying to do is to craft it in a way that we see the people around us want, you know, the common citizen really doesn't have their, I'm sorry, I should never say common citizen nowadays. The average Joe doesn't really have a voice in the legislature or access to Governor Whitmer or any of the other people that we sometimes get a chance to rub elbows with. So it's sort of incumbent upon people like ourselves to represent what we know the people want when we have an opportunity to do so. So I'm happy and proud to have been part of it.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, awesome, Rick.
Man. Well, we're really happy to have you.
If you want to give any shout outs or any plugs for any events,
the team over at the day job and everything
up,
as well.
Feel free to do so, man.
Just, yeah, man, couldn't be more stoked. So thanks so much, bro. Thanks for being on the show.
Excellent. Well, of course, you know, I do some public appearances for Redemption Cannabis, and Friday of this week, I will be at Redemption in Ann Arbor, if I'm not mistaken. I think I'm going to be in Ann Arbor doing some work for Redemption. But you can always catch the award-winning Jazz Cabbage Cafe from 4 to 6 p.m. every Tuesday. That's also broadcast on Apple TV, Roku TV, Spotify, Alexa, everywhere you can get podcasts.
Right on, man.
And I also do the Michigan Report on Pro Cannabis Media, which appears on Fridays during the Green Rush Live television program. So you can see me there as well.
Awesome, man. Well, yeah, thanks very much, bro. And thank everybody for watching. I think we had a good show, and it seems like the comments were blowing up today. So that's awesome. And we appreciate all the support. Hit us up on Instagram or Facebook if you want stickers. We have stickers. I don't have one of them next to me, but we have them, and we can like send them out to you and shit. And I'll have them at like one or two dispensaries that awesome, aren't absolutely man. Thanks, scared Jim. Shitless of this stuff. So we'll see.
I have them with me everywhere I go when I represent Redemption. So you can just find me, and I have Chad Watch, little round Chad Watch stickers for you.
Awesome. Awesome, man. So
excellent. Cool.
Thanks everybody. Have a nice afternoon.
Take care.